Hey guys, what's up? It's Lizzie Jane, and we are back with another episode of the podcast today. The one and only Sarah Benio is joining me in the chat. We go way back. I've known Sarah for quite some time. It has been absolutely lovely to watch the Sarah Benio project begin to flourish as she comes into her own and making waves in multiple cities in the United States. As she originally hails from Nashville, Tennessee, she is now residing in Orlando, Florida. You may have seen her at EDC. You may have seen her as guest appearances at Lost Lands, Moonrise, Project Glow, and much, much more. I'm really excited for the future of this project. She just does stuff differently. Everything from fashion to the creative process to the way that she is approaching her DJ sets and her project as a whole. So let's get into it. Without further ado, this is Lizzie Jane. If you love what we're doing here, if you love these conversations, if you enjoy them, laugh from them, learn from them, please make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Spotify, and tune into at This Is Lizzie Jane Podcast, and tune into at the Lizzie Jane Podcast on Instagram and TikTok for the best clips from every conversation. Don't forget to check out the Patreon at www.patreon.com/thisislizziejane to become a Patreon producer and see ad-free episodes. Let's do it. This is Lizzie Jane, and you are tuning into my podcast with special guest Sarah Benio. Hey guys, what's up? It's Lizzie Jane, and we are back on the Lizzie Jane podcast today. I am sitting down with a dear friend, Sarah Benio. Thank you so much for joining me today.
And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. For those who are not aware, Sarah and I have known each other for quite some time, back from like the old Ritz residency days. And,
Yes. And
at the time, I knew Sarah as like an up-and-coming artist, and you would like tell me your aspirations, and like now you're doing them and performing and DJing and writing and co-writing like on all these different projects. And I think it's so amazing, and it's lovely to see a fellow Florida up and coming act kind of like breaking out of Florida, which is always a difficult thing. So yeah, I'm very happy to have you on. How's life been?
It's been good. Thank you so much for all the kind words too. I really appreciate that. I know. I think the first time we met each other was like 2019, which seems like yesterday, in the 2020. Yeah. And I feel like everybody's lives have just changed so much, you know, and for maybe the worse, but also the better. Like, we're both fucking killing it. So
absolutely.
I'm very happy about that.
No, definitely. I mean, it's crazy because it was pre-pandemic, and I feel like the pandemic put a lot of things in perspective for a lot of people who are in music, are currently in music now, may not be in music now, like on all ends of the table, like artists, agents, managers, A&Rs, all of those people like through the pandemic had to become very innovative. And I think it allowed a lot of people to say, okay, what do I exactly want to do? What do I aspire to do? And it allowed people to kind of like hop out of touring or local shows or going out or quote unquote networking and like really just focus on your craft and your writing and like streaming and connecting with people in different places. And I feel like you pre-COVID to post-COVID is like a day and night difference. And I feel like post-COVID, like I just started seeing your name everywhere. Cause I've been obviously very connected within the Florida market, but then even out of the Florida market, you just played in LA, you just played in Denver. Like, has it been very surreal from a point of, you know, wanting to be booked as a local opening act to now you're going and you're playing support like in cities that you've never played it?
Yeah, it's definitely surreal. And it's also just a really rewarding feeling, you know, when you put years into your work. And, you know, even years before that, it almost can take years for people to even to start seeing your name. So people don't even realize like, oh, maybe there's 5 years to 10 years, even more behind that, you know, dedicating your whole life to music. So it definitely feels very surreal. I'm a big firm believer in like chasing your dreams and having like actionable goals behind those, you know, choices and things you want to do. So to like see your goals come to life through your own hard work is like, it's like, okay, yeah, like this is what I want. This is what I expect. But it's also like, whoa, is this really happening? Like, am I really playing EDC? Am I really collabing with this artist? Like, there's still that, I don't know, surreal feeling, like you said.
Yeah, it's definitely that like minor imposter syndrome mixed with like, I've worked my ass off and I have to be proud of where I'm at and proud of where I'm going and realize that definitely in music at the end of the day, the only thing that can really make it happen is yourself. So it's like
you
taking the time to first off, like not quit. Cause if you quit, there's no way you're ever going to get to the point in which, you know, your goals were set or where you idealize yourself at or at self-maintenance or kind of climbing to that next goal. And then also just like taking the time to work through like your own individual journeys, mistakes, and like learning from them. I feel like I sit down and I have so many conversations with other people and, you know, the journeys are aligned, but especially in music, there is no like, here's how to start your business. And here's step one, step two, step three, step four, step five to get you all the way to EDC or to get you all the way to a label dealer, to get you all the way to an agency. Everybody's journey is so different. And for people who maybe are not aware of who you are or what you do or the type of music you create, I would love for you to like give our listeners some background and some insight on just like who you are as a person, maybe even like before the Sarah Benio project kind of came to fruition.
Yeah, absolutely. So I originally grew up in a small town above Nashville with literally zero EDM, like no scene whatsoever. Very much had to find it on my own. But, you know, both of my parents are musicians. So I was really fortunate enough at a very young age to have my creativity encouraged and also fostered by, you know, being put in piano lessons and vocal lessons and all that good stuff. So I'm very grateful for that. So I've just loved music my whole life. My dad listens to rock and roll, Led Zeppelin. My mom loves country. My brothers are older than me, love rap. So I got a lot of like good experience with like a lot of genres at a young age, which, you know, fast forward to now, I feel like actually makes me a better DJ, which is really cool to see how all those, you know, influences come to head in the present. But yeah, when I first knew I wanted to be an artist, I was probably like 14 or sorry, actually like 12 years old. And Lady Gaga first came out with Poker Face. And, you know, at that time period, I had stopped playing piano for a while. I was actually burnt out of music. Had some bad experiences with some piano teachers. When I go to piano lessons, I actually would want to create more than like copy other people's music. And a lot of teachers didn't know what to do with that. Most teachers just teach you by the book. They want you to learn the classical stuff. And so I had a few teachers that just like really discouraged that. And I was just like, I don't want to do, like, if this is what music is, then I don't want to do this. Like, I want to be able to write my own stuff. So I stopped for a while, was really burnt out. Then I remember seeing Lady Gaga. I was already interested in her, but then one day, you know, in middle school, you get on YouTube and like look at your favorite artist and look at music videos or whatever. And I remember seeing a video of her sitting down at NYU, just stripped back, you know, no glitz, no glam, just her voice and her playing a grand piano. And something about that moment just like sent a catalyst into me wanting to truly be an artist and pursue that. Something about just like, you know, someone who, you know, can do the glitz, the glam and the art and the pop, but someone who's a true artist who can shine through even like just like an acoustic setting, that was mesmerizing to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, since that moment, I've been pursuing music. I, you know, played in some bands when I was in high school, did some orchestral band stuff, did choir, did everything, led worship in church when I was younger. Pretty much any musical involvement I could do, I was going to do. My dad took me to my first music festival when I was 14, which I saw Skrillex that year. That was in his like scary Monsters and Nice Sprites era. Mm-hmm. So during like this whole time period, you know, throughout middle school, throughout high school, I was listening to electronic music as well, but had no scene for it. You know, growing up in rural Southern Kentucky, right above Nashville, there was nothing, ain't shit. So when I was about 19, I kind of like knew, I was like, okay, I'm in a psych band. Do I want to keep doing like a psych indie route? Really loved indie music in high school. do I want to do that? Or do I want to do electronic music? Because I loved both sincerely. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I'm at a fork in the road. What do I want to do for my own artist project?
Yeah.
And I really sat and thought about it. And I was like, visualized myself in what aligned with me. And I was like, you know, I love indie music, but to be able to play music where people can just dance and heal and be in an environment, like a music festival, is everything. So ultimately, when I was 19, I hit that fork in the road to choose going down the road of electronic music.
Definitely. Well, thank you for the insight. Is there like something, did you go to a music festival that changed your opinion on everything? Like, was it just you loved the music so much, like through YouTube videos and like what you would see online, and you were like, wow, I know this culture and Plur and how accepting people are of one another. I definitely can align with the fact of I came from metal. I came from post-hardcore. The crowds are very, very, very different. And I think that when I went to my first quote unquote rave EDM show, it was definitely a culture shock in the way that people cared for each other, in the way that people were kind to each other, in the way that you could go and, you know, what you said before, you're taking your musical influences from like what your dad loves and what your mom loves. And, you know, you can make a remix and you can make a bootleg and a flip and still like put all of these different musical inspirations together. And I think that's why I really fell in love with electronic dance music, was because I could take from everything that I had done thus far and go into it. But it wasn't until it's hard because I often talk to people who really had a rave phase before they got into music. And I do not fall in that category, but I did have a rave phase where I had like the first 2 years I was in school, one in DC and one in Orlando, where I was just like embodied by Ultra and Okeechobee and, you know, every Firestone, Venue 578, that's now Vanguard, and, you know, all of these guilds, like all of these venues that were just nightclubs, music venues, but through these crazy wild shows. Like, how did you know that like EDM was it for you?
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, growing up in Florida, if you or whoever's listening, if you grow up in a bigger city where EDM is like already established, like you do not realize how lucky you are, because there's so many places across the country where that doesn't exist.
Even now, you know,
like
even now.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was first exposed to electronic music, I was probably 9. I used to love playing Dance Dance Revolution with one of my best childhood friends. I love it. I would like ask for the CDs. Like there's like a CD at Burger King and a kid's meal. Maybe my dad go take me and get, we would put on like, you know, iTunes radio back in the day and like listen to like house music and trance. So, you know, growing up, I had always been listening to electronic music. I don't want to say like I ever had like a rave phase. I wanted to have a rave phase, but there was nothing around me. Like I sincerely would try to think, I'd be like, you know, passing places when we go through different states and it looked like a venue, and I'd be like, oh my God, like, why can't I just go to this rave? Let me sneak out. It's like a 13-year-old to figure out a way to go to this. But, you know, the closest thing that I really had to that when I was growing up was really Bonnaroo.
Okay.
So I'm very grateful for my dad taking me to that. And so that was like my first, you know, real experience into like music festival culture, which I don't know if you've ever been, but it definitely gives Plur vibes. It's all about like radiating positivity. And yeah, when I first went, it was like a whole new world that I absolutely fell in love with. Just the community and the camping and helping one another, people going through lines and high-fiving each other, and just happy to exist and be there in community and in unity was the most beautiful thing ever. And I went like every single year consecutively after that.
That's so amazing.
So it wasn't until, you know, I was halfway through college that I really started going to, you know, quote unquote raves. I moved to Nashville to pursue like a degree in audio production. And that was the closest thing I had to shows, which, you know, was amazing. But you know, I would say as far as like having a rave phase, like it just kind of almost happened as my career was happening. Cause it's like something I always knew that I wanted to do. I've always wanted to somehow create like this like larger than life pop world with the EDM world, you know, collaborating, doing the vocalist thing while existing in electronic music. But you know, as I've moved through life, it's almost like this phase has kind of grown with me. Like the love for the music has always been there, but the experiences have grown with me, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely makes sense. And it makes you fall in love with it more. I think just on my end, definitely from my own journey, it's definitely been an out-of-body experience where you start looking at something that you loved as a consumer, and then you kind of exist in that space. Like the first time that you were guest listed, or the first time that you went to a festival and you were backstage and you realize how many people it takes to really do this, and how many, you know, I'll always remember, especially, it was literally 2019. That was the first time. That was when I met you. That was the first time that I went backstage at a festival, which was EDC Orlando, and it was to meet Black Tiger Sex Machine and their team and talk. And I remember watching them and watching Rez walk in with a team of 30, and they employed every single person there. They were all their running point, LDs, production, visual designers, managers, their agents were there. And I saw like how big the aspirations could be of like what you could make out of a project. And obviously they are the top of the top. They are the A-list acts that are fitting into the smaller pocket of most artists that exist in electronic dance music. But it really showed me what was possible. So it's kind of like your love grows for it as you see those possibilities come into that fruition. And especially with you, I was very attracted to rock music. Like, I think you have the influences from the pop world. And like, I was very rock, indie, metal, screamo stuff. And like, I can definitely see on your end where you get your pop influences from. And I definitely respect you because I feel like you've had to jump over hurdles, through obstacles, whatever, whatever, in the way that you've chosen to present yourself through the Sarah Benyo project, which is very, you know, you have a lot of girls in our scene who quite frankly dress as guys. You have a lot of girls in our scene who kind of have one look, or they have one gimmick, and that's kind of it. And you very rarely see someone that is really pushing like fashion forward, like you would see Dua Lipa, or you would see a quote unquote pop star, you know, in today's age, take the stage. But people who are consumers look at it so differently. Whereas if you were a pop star playing Lollapalooza and you dressed a certain way, no one would say anything. But if you're a DJ and you're a woman and they're like, oh, she's got this thing on and she looks like a raver. And like, I've definitely, one, respect you for it. And two, like, I would love to talk about that and where you made that decision and like some things that you have battled in not only like pushing forward in a performative front, but like choosing that type of fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my whole life has had this whole theme of having to choose myself over and over again. And anytime that I've ever had to conform, I have felt so unaligned and uncomfortable. So, you know, even when I was younger, I, you know, again, grew up in a very small rural Kentucky town where it was like Hollister and Sperry's and khakis. So if you were like a scene kid with the bright pink pants on and like you're expressing yourself, like you're getting bullied. And so, you know, I had a really difficult time at a very young age, you know, was already getting put into trying to get put into boxes. And every time I would try to look a certain part or be the preppy kid or, you know, be the sporty kid or to be whatever, all of it felt so aligned, unaligned with my soul. But at the same time, when I would be myself, I would get bullied or ridiculed or whatever. And so it really put me in a really tough position at a young age. And so, you know, as I've grown up, I realized it was a product of my environment and less about, you know, my self-worth and something being wrong with me. But, you know, fast forward into now, into my music, is it's kind of the same way. It's like, okay, well, I'm not exactly, you know, this like DJ that wears all black and is the mysterious producer, but I'm not just a vocalist who's just behind the scenes helping other people perform on their tracks. And like you said, there is this kind of like unspoken energy, or even like you can just see how people interact with you, where you can step into a green room, and because you're expressing yourself through fashion in a way that maybe other people aren't, they think that you're like, oh, just like a random backstage or whatever. Or, you know, there's kind of like some misogyny, quite frankly, that comes out through people judging you through your fashion choices in EDM, which, like you said, is so crazy because like every other genre that doesn't exist. If like, you know, Katy Perry came into a backstage area dressed with like cupcakes all over her and rainbows, like you'd be like, hell yeah, that's Katy Perry. Like that's mm-hmm. a pop star. So, you know, it definitely presents its own unique set of challenges. But at the same time, like I'm happy to be that forerunner because I can't imagine like being anyone other than myself. And I think a really important component to being an artist is what sets you apart is your authenticity. You know, if I wanted to, I could go put myself in a box and look a certain way and put out certain music, and I'd probably honestly blow up way faster, but that's not who I am. I'm not going to play that game. Mm-hmm. I want to, you know, be in it for the long run and really be myself, because that's how I know people are going to, you know, tap into my frequency. And that's how I'm going to gain the fans that I want to have. That's how I'm going to touch the lives that I want to have. So it's kind of been a lifelong lesson where I've had to really learn self-love and self-acceptance and accept that like, hey, you were designed not to fit into a box, you know, so that's okay. That's like, that's you. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it makes so much sense. And it honestly, after COVID, after I left the residency at the Ritz, I felt the same exact way. I said I could put myself in a box and dress a certain way and make really, really, really heavy dubstep and try and somehow make my voice that is a singer-songwriter, raspy, non-top liner voice fit and beat my head against the wall and not enjoy this, or I could make music that I really enjoy and love and don't feel like it's, you know, there's, again, even though we live our passion and we're so privileged to be able to do that, there are moments that do feel like jobs, just like you working a 9-to-5 or you working anywhere else. But when you lose that spark and creativity, and quite frankly, in electronic dance music, especially when it comes to the business side of things, they would love for you to fit in a box, because then you are very easy to sell and you're very easy to play support on X Tour forever and play support here and here and here. But I believe that you're never going to become a headliner that way. You know, it may somehow work out where you have this career shelf life that is 2 to 5 years because a really big artist put you on and you got a really big fan base from them. But the only way that you're going to break through and really create a lane of your own is, unfortunately, the road less traveled, which is very much so longer than saying, I am a dubstep DJ and producer. I am a tech house DJ and producer. And I think that fan bases now are ready for the diversity. I think they're a lot more ready for the multi-genre faceted sets because they are tired of the same dubstep sounding the same and tired of the same melodic bass being in F minor and 150 and being interchangeable with an Millennium song. And I think it's just through that, it's a series of conscientious decisions that really you have to make as an artist. And they're very quite difficult decisions when you definitely have that voice in the back of your head that goes, well, if I just did this over and over and over again, this would be a lot easier. But it's not always, I have to feel like artistically fulfilled. And I feel like you're the same way, where you're able to hop over to all these different types of subgenres in electronic dance music and write and have notes on production and be in co-writing sessions. And like that, back to what we were talking about before we started on this podcast, is what the definition of an artist is. When you look in the indie lanes and the pop lanes, and really just, I think even of like the Fredigans, and you see these newer artists that come out, Sammy Virgies, like all these guys from the UK and certain people who are influencing US acts, they're encouraging that diversity in sound. And I think the fans are ready for it, but it's just, you know, you have to bet on yourself. And I think it's just so important having a team that believes in you and people around you that support you, or it's going to make it next to near impossible. And with that, you know, you saying, I go into green rooms and people look at me. I think some of that's a girl thing, unfortunately. And I think that there's, again, this stigma and this unspoken cool kids club that everybody like wants to fit into, whether it's on a local level and you got the local DJs who are playing every gig and they're playing the local spots at festivals, or all the way up to people who are on massive agencies selling out 2,000 to 5,000 cap rooms. They roll in, they're wearing all black. The girls who are in that picture are usually the girlfriends or the girls for the night. And it's this really hard thing to look at as a female or a non-binary, or, you know, in the scene that is supposed to be full of acceptance and plur and community.
Exactly. Exactly.
But there's there's this double-sided kind of thing that, you know, I hear is talked about on podcasts, but not really anywhere else, because, you know, you don't want it to get you in trouble, or you don't want to say, oh, this is what's happening in the scene and da 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 da. But it is there. And I think it just takes, it really takes, in my opinion, people who are advocating on the side of men for women, for, it doesn't matter what gender you are, for unique projects that are pushing the boundaries to be supported and get those spots that isn't just your run of the Joe dubstep act, your run of the Joe gimmick EDM act, to bring them to the forefront, which is going to continue making it easier. And I see it happening, but it takes so much sacrifice and risk from the involved parties that it just goes back in my opinion, it's like, you just have to be authentic to yourself, because as an artist or as a manager or as, you know, a freshman agent or an A&R, like, you do so much work for free. You put in so much time. You know, we work 100-hour weeks. Most of us have jobs that are not music orientated, or they are music orientated and they have nothing to do with our work, that you have to love what you're doing or you're going to end up hating it. And I got to a point where I was like batting my head against the wall, hating it, not liking what I was making. And I was like, whoa, you're going to like you're going to snowball yourself into walking away from this if you don't start to make art that's like authentic to you.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, you nailed everything on the head. Like you said, it's like you could fit into a box and, you know, you could play those support slots. And yeah, you like could get on that dream festival stage, but what's the shelf life of the product you're selling? It's like, okay, that's great. And if you want to tour for a few years and get your bag, that's fine. But like, for me, it's like, and for you, like, longevity, like I said, making a long lasting impact. And it's like, you know, when labels approach you, it's like almost like, you know, if I'm sitting in a room with someone and they're like, well, what if I go in making the same music that everybody else is making, wearing the same thing with the same branding, with the same logo, with the same sound design, with everything, and there's five other acts that are bigger than me, if an A&R approached me and they're like, well, what sets you apart if we already have these five other acts signed, like, I'm fucked. Like, there's nothing that sets me apart. So that's why, you know, I mean, if that's who you are, then that's who you are. And that's the style you want to have, all love. But like, you know, to a degree, if you want to become a successful artist, you really do have to lean into your authenticity. And maybe it is a longer game, but at the end of the day, no one can take away from you, you know, your brain and your mind and how you view art and how you bring art into this world. And it can be tough, you know, on a music business end. You can, a lot of people who gatekeep opportunities, or, you know, there's a lot of, like you said, rooted misogyny. But I do think that we live in a beautiful time period where, you know, social media is a blessing and a curse, but it is such a blessing in a sense where we can have direct contact to the fans. And what honestly means more to me than anything, and when I do get sad or I do cry because something maybe fucked up just happened, is like, you know what, when I root myself and I center myself, I'm like, okay, you know what, none of this matters, because at the end of the day, I make music for myself and I make music for my fans. And if your fans resonate and you gain a massive following online, like, eventually you're undeniable. You know, mm-hmm. someone might could deny you opportunities left and right over here, you know, for a temporary amount of time. But if you focus on being yourself and you really foster the relationship with your fans, which is who I make music for, you know, I don't make music for the producers. I make music for my fans and my listeners. You know, you gain 2 million, 5 million followers off of, you know, being yourself and really fostering your relationship with your audience, then eventually you're going to be undeniable. People can 100%. Only withhold no. those for so long.
It's so, so true. And I think there's definitely, you know, situations where people blow up online and then maybe they don't translate into ticket sales. And somebody told me this a long time ago, and I can never remember who it is. And they just said, you know, you can't choose your fan base. Like the fans that choose you, you can't choose them. So why would you be someone who you're not to get a certain crowd base or a certain base of fans that act a certain way, that behave a certain way online, that, you know, treat other people a certain way? I'm so for building the community. I think that there are so many artists out there now, and there's so many ways for, I hate saying the word industry plant because I really don't feel like industry plants necessarily exist in this day and age, because we have such strong tools as social media, and like no one can put your, like, I can't put myself in someone else's shoes who like blows up overnight, because like I saw them blow up overnight. They could have been doing this for 15 years. They could have been doing this for 7 years. So like, I hate saying that, but there's ways that people can get picked up by certain teams that maybe they have a really large artist and then they get with that agent and then they're on every festival for the year. And then they're like pushed and they're like, oh, go perform. But they haven't had that time to build that community. So like, when it's time for them to be like hands on the ground, going into these venues, it's very difficult. And it's like not a great way to set yourself up for like long-term success. Like, again, get your bag, like have that 2 to 3 years. You've been around long enough. I've been around long enough to see people come, pop off and go and never fucking come back. And like, and that is, again, what you said. You don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I want to be performing, co-writing, co-producing in studios, doing actual work and getting credits, but then also being able yes. to say, okay, I go and I rather play small headline shows that we can sell out and I can actually put things on my shoulders to build with the community than just go, you know, I'm only going to play these shows with Excision. I'm only going to play these big festivals, because then you kind of have everybody picking you up. And I think just in this day and age, with how many artists are aspiring to do this, really doing this, touring nationally, making a career out of it, you know, even you see somebody touring nationally, 9 times out of 10, they still have a 9 to 5. They still have a remote job. They still have other forms of income. But if that community isn't there, and like, you're like, what is it? The not the apple falls far from the tree. It's like the horse comes before like the foot. I don't know. It's like if it comes too quickly and like you're not ready for it, it sometimes can like bite yourself in the ass. And like, I feel like the way that you have come up now in Florida, which again is like very, very similar to my journey in different ways, is forcing you to have a really, really strong community that is like your rock in like a very large market state for dance music. Like, it is a win-win situation where I can go, I haven't been a resident for 3 years, but I still can play a show and sell 400 tickets. Like, that's not normal. Like that, like there is something definitely about these larger markets where the way that you have come up is like, you're not like this local act, but you're like also not like, oh, I'm headlining Vanguard, but it's allowing these people to be a part of your journey where they're going to feel the privilege that they were there for a really long time to see you play EDC for the first time, to see you play Circuit Ground, to see you play X, Y, and Z, and then build and build and build from there. And I think that's always a very cool thing for a fan to be involved in that doesn't happen often in this climate. It just doesn't.
Yeah. I'm very fortunate to live in Florida. It's got a great market for sure. And one reason I moved here is just because of that. You know, living in and growing up around Nashville, you can go to a show, but the artist to fan ratio is so disproportionate in the wrong way. You go to a show, but 99% of the people are also aspiring DJs or artists. So it's honestly, people are like, oh, Music City, it must be good. But to build yourself, it can be really difficult there because there's not enough fans. So yeah. I really love Florida because there is just so many people who genuinely love electronic music who will ride and die for you. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice, you know, it is really nice. And I'm really happy to have so many people in my corner that are getting to watch this come up. And I don't take them for granted.
100%. Yeah. It's always that appreciation factor. And just like, I do love social media in that way where like we can have our broadcast channels and we can have our Discords or our Facebook groups, and it allows you to be more personable with the individual and it allows you to see them like in a different light. Like it's always amazing to like see someone that has supported you online for so long and then you meet them in person. And it's, yeah, at the end of the day, you're not making music for other producers, which I think more production oriented individuals get really wrapped up in quite often in such a technical field. You're making music for yourself and in turn attracting the people who fuck with it and love it and want to be a part of it and want to be a part of like the journey and like the transparency online. And do you feel like I feel like post COVID is when I started to see you really play a bit more like regional orientated shows. Is there kind of a moment where you were like, okay, you know, everything's based on momentum. Like you felt that momentum building and you were like, okay, this is our time to take advantage of this, capitalize, get as many opportunities as possible. Let me write as much as possible. Like you're in a very unique lane of your own where you are one of the only, I would say, primary centric vocal artists that are being booked for full DJ sets. Like you said before, you have Haleen. Maybe there's others. I can't think of them. And there is that stigma where it's like, oh, you're just a top liner, but guess what? Nobody would fucking give a shit about the song if they didn't hear the lyrics. Like it's literally such a thing. And like, I'm glad that producers see it now. I think there is a change in the tide where they are starting to respect him more, at least the ones in my circle. But someone who has always started with like a pen and paper and like a notebook and a piano in front of me, I can't imagine not having the, like, I don't know what my music would sound like if there weren't vocals. Like that's very hard for me to sit in. So like vocalists are just so important. But again, I think there's this lane where like at the end of the day, electronic music is moving in a way in which if you are not unique, like you're really not going to last unless you're already on top. And you see a lot of people finding ways to incorporate live elements. I mean, how many DJs have you started to see sing? How many DJs have you started to see incorporate drum pads, MIDI keyboards, live synths? Like you have to have a performative element to make your show crazy unless you have like Excision finances and the visuals behind you that create mm-hmm. that. Like just talk about that a bit for me. I would love to know like your thoughts on all of that.
Okay. So like reword the original question just one more time.
I love myself because I ramble on and then I have no idea what I asked. So you being just right. No, I know. Like you being an artist and a vocalist that is predominantly vocal based performative art, but you're being booked for full range DJ sets, full hour regular offers. Like I would get like Dion, like, you know, Dion Timber would get Dylan Francis, like a regular DJ set, not you joining someone on stage, which like, again, I know you have tons of friends who you do co-writing sessions with and, you know, they'll pop out for EDC Las Vegas or they'll pop out for their like minute song and then that's it. And then is there a moment that you felt like the tides were turning in your career path where you were no longer really looked at as like that local girl, female DJ?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gosh, it's such a good question. You know, when I, I guess to touch on the local thing first, you know, a lot of people don't realize that I've actually moved around quite a bit. Like since COVID, I went from Nashville to St. Pete to LA, back to Nashville, and now I'm back in, now I'm in Orlando. So that was all in the span of 3 years. So, but that was to follow my career, you know, really that was me trusting the universe and following my intuition. And it's obviously worked out very well for me to listen to that. So when I think of like local, you know, I kind of like flashback to Nashville and, you know, it was hard to break into there. Like transparently, like the scene isn't very supportive of upcoming artists. It's a weird, weird competition for no reason. And so I didn't feel very supported there, which is like sad because again, that's like my hometown. And don't get me wrong, like that's where, you know, I have a lot of really amazing people who are my day ones, you know, who did give me a chance. And so I'm very, very grateful for them. But that's really where I was a local, but I really wasn't given the opportunity that I knew that I deserved. So I had to go basically make a name for myself in other places that I resonated with that actually did see my value and my worth. And now I come back to my hometown and I'm not playing a local show. I'm supporting Nightmare, or I'm supporting Adventure Club, and I'm coming out with Adventure Club on one of the nicest venues on Broadway. So, you know, those are moments where I'm like, wow, okay, like I'm really proud of myself. I've really sacrificed everything, you know, my whole family, like I'm away from my family, thousands of miles away from my family. You know, nobody sees that. Mm-hmm. Nobody sees the sacrifices that it takes to truly make your dreams happen. And sometimes, you know, if you don't grow up in a place like Los Angeles or Denver or Orlando or Tampa or wherever, you really have to make some hard choices sometimes to up and leave everything and just trust the universe. And so, you know, when I moved to LA for a little bit, you know, it was 2021, but you know, that's when I started like landing like some of my big break collabs. When I first had my first collab with Jessica Ottefrad, and I feel like that really set some momentum for me, which was very exciting. Just being in LA in general is awesome, and it puts a fire under you because it's sink or swim. I'd be recording vocals and looking out the window at the skyscrapers, and I'd be like, if you don't do this take, well, you're out. You're like, you're gonna like, it really like puts a fire under you to be successful because, you know, you're fighting with a million other people. So I worked really hard, made a lot of connections, did really well. At some point, it just didn't make sense for me anymore. I knew that if I wanted to build myself, it would have to be back on the East Coast, you know, again, where
LA is hard. LA's not the right place for everybody.
It's the place, you know, it's good for connections, but if you're wanting to build yourself in a live element and kind of start to dominate other markets, like the East Coast is a great place to do that because, you know, the flight to Nashville to Orlando is an hour and 20 minutes. The flight from, you know, from Nashville to New York's 2 hours, to DC is an hour and a half to get to Echo Stage, to get to Houston or Austin or wherever. It's such a good centralized place, Atlanta. So there's a lot of markets that you can actually tackle very quickly. Yep. If you know, you get into the right hands of the right people and you perform well, that will keep asking you back. And a lot of the fans that I've played for in Orlando, in Tampa, in DC, they are so loyal. So it's been like a really cool thing, you know, on this journey to like keep following my intuition and going where I feel like is going to grow my project. So the term local is kind of funny to me because I'm like, well, I'm kind of a local in this city, but it's like the place that I felt the least supported. Now I feel like people claim me in Florida, which is like cute. And I claim Florida. I like it.
Yeah.
But it is like really, really rewarding. I would say, you know, in 2022, I would say is when I really started feeling the momentum. I've been really grateful to have a team behind me that believes in me. And like you said, sometimes it does unfortunately take people that are higher up that maybe do have connections that are more powerful to be like, hey, you need to believe in her. And they're the people who can help you get to those places. So I am very, very grateful for my team, for believing in me and like, you know, taking a chance with me. And then through that, people resonating with that. And then it's like, okay, well, well, damn, this is a girl who's killing it, like killing it DJing, and she's singing, and these fans love her. We're going to have her back. Because like you said, it's kind of a gamble, because not a lot of vocalists do this. A lot of vocalists are just, you're out for a song for a minute, and then that's it. That's just not me. And I personally, like, I love DJing. Like, DJing is a part of my soul. Like, growing up as a piano player, as a musician, I'm sure you do too. You have a strong ear. So you do get to take all of those, like, song choices and, like, history of, like, all the songs you listen to and really apply that musical knowledge to a whole new journey of art. Mm-hmm. So all that being said is, like, yeah, like, it's definitely... like been a process for sure.
it's definitely a journey. And do you feel like, just because I've seen you in LA, like you do a lot of co-writing with a lot of like what I would consider vocal, like a lot of them have like top liners in EDM, but they're really artists in their own right because they release a lot of other music where they're not necessarily top lining or singing or writing for your average EDM producer or da 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 da. Like they release their own music and they work with their own set of producers where, you know, it's just their name on the record. Is there a reason why you feel like you've had success in this when I've talked to a very good amount of individuals that have worked with comparable artists to you and have had similar aspirations, but they have not found success in being looked upon as a full performer that can not only sing, but is being booked for a set at a festival or a set at, you know, a club night or a support slot on a tour?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a constant, but I mean, I think I probably still deal with that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, even when like you're trying to get a booking agent, sometimes like, you know, I have one now, but at first they're like, well, don't you just sing on other people's tracks? It's like, that's a question you get hit with immediately. And it's like, you know, forget the fact that maybe this vocalist over here is helping this other DJ go on a worldwide tour mm-hmm. and play XYZ residency and do this, but like you wouldn't give that vocalist who essentially really gave that artist their entire platform, you wouldn't give them the same opportunities. That doesn't exactly sit right with me, and I don't think it's completely fair. So like, I really hate to say this because I feel like it's fucked up, but it really just, I feel like, takes having someone sometimes on your team that can help fight those people who think that way. And yeah. I mean, I still have my manager in emails fighting with people still for me to respect me and give me the value that I deserve. You know, it's like becoming less and less. And, you know, you, like you said, more and more people are starting to understand, like, we don't need to treat the electronic world as like, oh, there's just only producers can exist in this world. Nope. We should think of everyone as artists, whether they're an artist that's primarily a vocalist or an artist that's primarily a producer. We're all artists in our respective forms. We shouldn't gatekeep people's art and gatekeep them from expressing that however they see fit. I don't think that's fair to artists, but it's trying to get through to those people that just don't see that way. And sometimes mm-hmm. those people are unfortunately the people that hold the keys to these opportunities. And sometimes it just takes having someone on your team that can go head to head with these people to really help them see your value. And that's all I got on that one. I hope that, you know, more artists, you know, I really love that John Summit has been crediting Hayla correctly on everything mm-hmm. out of a featured title, really kind of like showing these producers that, hey, we're equal here. Like, so equal. She's also an artist instead of it yeah. being like featuring her, you know, so obviously sometimes featuring in the title makes sense, but I really hope that like, especially men in the music industry really continue to fight for women who are, you know, producers and vocalists to be seen as equal and deserving of the same exact opportunity that males are presented.
100%. And I definitely see there is a small change, but you're correct where this is a lane that has not typically been established or traveled down. So people who have worked in this industry for the last decade are like, what the hell is this? Like, this isn't the way that this is done. And I think that it just takes for, again, people who can advocate for you besides yourself. I think that's something that is, it's like at the end of the day, like you want to be the really like beautiful, nice, kind artist that you don't want to have to be a bitch and you don't have to want to put your foot down and say, well, no, or I'm not doing this, or why are you treating me X way, or why are these splits this way, or no, I'm not taking a fee when I know the song's going to do multiple million plays. It's very helpful to have someone on your team be able to advocate that for you, so you're not put in a certain line of perception, or, you know, and it's always different when you have somebody talking about you again that's not you yourself kind of representing yourself and doing everything, but you have to make sure that your project's ready to be in that space before someone comes along and kind of hops on board. Is there a moment, I guess, with the team that you work with now where you're like, this is right, I was ready for a team, I needed help? Like, what does that kind of look like for you in like your personal and like your professional life? Because like, as we talked before, you know, being in relationships where, you know, you may have a toxic significant other, or you may have a manager who wants you to only write music that sounds like this and won't take anything that doesn't sound like this, or you're a producer and a vocalist, but they only want you to sing on these other tracks. Like, what kind of made you align with the team that you have now?
I mean, first and foremost, I think when you're picking a team is they've got to be passionate about what you do. Because at the end of the day, you know, as an artist, you have to know who you are and what you want to do. And if that's who you truly know who you are, then like you said, it's the road less traveled. It's the hero's journey. But if you know that, okay, universe, this is my purpose, and I know that this is where I'm supposed to go, so I also trust you, and I trust that you will align the right people to help me with this. Mm-hmm. It's like, honestly, it's almost a spiritual thing for me, because, you know, it's like, yeah, it's scary. Yeah, maybe people might look at you a certain way or not want to give you these opportunities. But you know what? If you truly know your purpose and you know it on a really deep down spiritual level, that you know this is what you're supposed to do, then you know you're taken care of. And at some point, someone's going to come along, a manager, booking agent, talent buyer, fan, whoever is going to support you. So I am very picky about who I work with. I'm currently trying to like expand my team more as the more hats grow. You know, you got your social media team, and then you got to have, you know, the booking agent and the manager, and then you got to have your photographers you go to and your video content team. But I really try to have people around me that I align with and that align with me. You know, that's just as simple as that. I think it's really important to stay true to who you are.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very like appealing as an up and coming act to see a bigger manager or a bigger team and say, well, if I was with that manager, I was with that team, these things would be happening for me and these opportunities would be on my plate. But I think oftentimes, like, there are things that come out of favors. And at the end of the day, like if the manager is not passionate about the project or the agent isn't passionate about the project, and it's all done over this larger client on the team or this favor from this and this and that, it very rarely ends up being like your vision coming to fruition. It's just like, we're taking what we can get, and maybe these aren't the right opportunities for us. And maybe this is just, you know, not aligning how this needs to be aligned, or you don't really have that, like, why am I making this music? What, like, what does a live show look like? Like all of those things that you should be able to very clearly answer if you have this like big team behind you. And even one person, even someone who like is your friend who has no idea who the fuck they're doing, but they go with, you know, with you to shows, or they go and they support you and they go and they help out when you need to, like all of that stuff is important. Yeah. The passion is like so much more important. I have people like when I was in Tampa, I would have people when I was doing the same thing, traveling around the East Coast, playing for little amounts of money just to establish myself in New York, DC, Philly, Chicago, Atlanta, New Orleans, North Carolina, Charlotte. Like it was very I think it was a very like trivial point where I would have other artists come up to me and say, well, like, I need a manager. I'm ready for a manager. I'm trying to chase down this person. Like, there's definitely a thing for being like professionally persistent. But when it comes to like your project, like if the passion isn't there from the other individual, it's just not going to happen. Like, it's just, it's, yeah, it's going to be a really hard, difficult road that usually ends up in you being like benched at an agency or not getting the attention that you deserve.
That's exactly what I was thinking of too, while you were saying all of that, is I feel like where a lot of artists can go wrong is maybe they have a bigger manager approach them or a bigger talent, a booking agent. And, you know, they see that they've worked with XYZ artists and they believe because they have all of these accolades that they're going to essentially do the same for them. And maybe they do, but sometimes you just get shelved and then you're stuck in a bad deal. You signed for years and now you're just sitting there for years shelved on somebody else's roster, which is so unfortunate. So it's better, you know, in my opinion, to have maybe someone that's smaller, but is going to ride and die for you and, you know, turn over every stone to look mm-hmm. for an opportunity for you because they believe in you that much.
100%.
So that's going to do more for you than just having someone's name in your bio, but isn't, you know, like you said, maybe it's a favor for somebody else or mm-hmm. a favor for here and there. And, you know, I don't know, sometimes it's predatory too. It's like, you know, someone might see a smaller artist who is popping off and maybe, you know, it's predatory and they're like, it's a quick bag for them, but they're not really passionate about the project, but they make the artist believe that, oh yeah, I can get you this opportunity and XYZ, and I'll put you on all of this. And that's like exactly what the artist wants to hear. Of course you want to be on all those opportunities, but for the manager, it's a cash grab or whoever, you know, there's Definitely. Really good people. There's really good people out there, but there's also situations like that. So with that being said, yeah, go ahead.
No, you're good. I definitely agree with you there. And I feel like I'm watching that happen in real time with TikTok, where you have these people who really hit those numbers and then they're picked up, and some of them, they fucking sell out every room. They sell out every small room they're getting put in right now, which is incredible. And it shows that the platform can work. But then there's also people getting picked up on very, very large conglomerate corporate agencies that are being put on. And it's like, we don't even have a project here. We have a viral page. We have a viral mm-hmm. whatever. And it's like, well, I know you have to have like the car running and doing laps around the track before you should think about having, you know, a larger agent involved or being on a larger agency. But it's also, you know, right now you see a lot of people running off of very minute levels of short-term momentum that are coming from these numbers on these platforms. And it's only going to be like a time will tell to see if these artists and see if these projects are quick cash grabs for what they are at the time, and if they get benched and if they're around in 2 to 3 years or if they last for a decade. Like, I'm very curious to see how it pans out, because I feel like now reels on Instagram are definitely doing better. They're definitely helping more. They're definitely growing more. Mm-hmm. But like before TikTok, we didn't see what we have seen in the last like 3 years, where you would just get somebody besides like your YouTube stars, which a lot of people in dance music until I've seen probably pretty recently don't really take huge advantage of YouTube. So like that wasn't really a thing in our lane. You had more of the SoundCloud remixes blow up and the SoundCloud era, and like you would have a Lewis the Child remix and it would hit millions and millions and millions of plays, and that would platform them. Like that's what TikTok was, but on such, or is, but on such a higher level, where now it's like leveled out. Now you don't see people, like, in my opinion, like going to that viral rate in which it did 2020, 2021, 2022.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in a very interesting period of time, like you said, where a video might go viral, but it might not translate into ticket sales. Mm-hmm. So it's and I'm interested to see how the industry continues to like gauge you know, different statistics for things.
Absolutely. Because they definitely, it's always like an ebb and flow, and it always just takes you consistently being proactive and like hopping on the next app when it comes out. As like sad as that sounds, it's like you have to take advantage of what you can to continue growing, because there's literally so many people aspiring to do the same thing that we do, but also being proud of like how far you've come and like looking back and not just always saying what's next, what's next, what's next, like being proud of the things that you've accomplished. Because I think there's a lot of people that like always will wish that they could do what you've already done that you're not necessarily quote unquote happy with yet. You know, you're like, okay, I'm thinking about what's next. I'm thinking about what's there. But if you kind of can't live in the moment, it's hard to like enjoy the full journey.
That for sure. And I just feel like, you know, people shouldn't take for granted, no matter how small or big their platform is, their relationship with their fans. I forgot, I learned this forever ago. I don't know if it was in like a class in college or what, but there's like a concept of like dating your fans versus like marrying, getting them to marry you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people might hit the follow button and they're kind of like, yeah, like that video is cool. It's very entertaining. Like, let me follow them. I want to see more, but they maybe have not like fallen in love with you yet. And so like, you know, if you're even a smaller artist, but you foster those 4,000 followers on your TikTok or those 20,000 followers on Instagram, if you really connect with them and take the time to reply to them and go to meet and greets after your show or before or whatever, I feel like, honestly, that is more of that's going to generate more ticket sales than just continuing to create viral moments. Not that viral moments aren't important, and they do obviously help you. But really that longevity and, you know, keeping people coming back for more is so much of a relationship building. And it's a very interesting time right now too in history where we did just get out of COVID, but there's still these long-term effects of isolation on people where people are so lonely and we're all in remote jobs, or we're, you know, so used to just being alone that we find ourselves subconsciously isolating ourselves so much more. So we crave that intimacy, I think, more than ever. And I think that's just the impacts of social media in general. Yes. But, you know, we can follow someone and see what they're doing. But when you kind of create that relationship and break that like fourth wall with your fans, I feel like that's enough to like sell out places if you really, really create those connections with them.
Yeah. And it's not this, there used to be this thing, I feel like even pre-COVID, where it was, you're the untouchable DJ. You're the David Guetta standing on the Empire State Building when everybody's locked down and has lost their livelihood playing a DJ set on a Ferrari. And like, you're like the untouchable thing. And I still think in other genres, I mean, I don't know. It's just so different now. Like with like the streaming that happened where you saw everybody in their bedrooms to TikTok and Instagram being like, you can post as many raw clips as you want, but they really want you being personal and breaking that fourth wall and talking to the fans and talking to the audience, where you have that ability now and people are almost more fond of people they can relate to and the things that they're going through and the problems that they're having and why they wrote this song and why it's so similar to the breakup that just happened, or you guys just lost your job, or mental, you know, fortitude that you're, you know, writing this hook about and now you're making a video on it. Like, I feel like people attract themselves to that a lot more than, ooh, look at my press photos, I'm hotter than you, or I'm more wealthy than you, or I'm doing cooler things than you. Like, there's a balance where I feel like you have those like Griffins of the world and the Illeniums of the world where you're like, damn, wish I was getting married at Aspen, or wish I was flying on a private jet. But they also are like, hey, I'm in the studio, or hey, I'm at home, or hey, I'm doing live streams. Like that, like fourth wall, breaking that down and the transparency of like the highs and the lows of your life. Like, I always feel like people just mess with that more now than they like ever used to.
Yeah. It's crazy. I'll post like a press photo. And like you said, like, it's like, I'm like, wow, this is actually a great photo. No, like post like the most like goofiest thing ever, or just like something that's more organic. And it might've taken you like 10 minutes to make, and everyone's like, I love this. It blows up. It's like insane. Yep. But, you know, I even had a fan recently who's literally been a day one, like since like 2017, 2018 followed me. And he reached out to me and he was like, you know, like, I actually love this. Like you, it almost feels like more personable and we can relate with you more. And I'm like, wow, like, that's crazy. It's like, I'm in this whole journey of being authentic right now, like figuring out, like, you know, I've been on a lot of people's tracks. So I'm kind of carving my own lane and I'm like, okay, well, who is Sarah? Like, what does Sarah's project truly want to look like? And how do I want to represent myself and how do I see the world? And so how do I want to, you know, present myself? And so I've been really just leaning into who I am and being like, okay, if this is who I'm going to be, let's see what happens. And it's like, as soon as you do that and you kind of, like you said, break the fourth wall, like fuck like a mysterious press photo or whatever, and you put something that's just you, but being real. And it's like, it's just like the universe knows and then everyone taps into it. It's crazy.
No, it definitely is. Like the authentic version is the best version. It's just, it's definitely hard for people to get there. I think in a day of social media where they're always comparing and they're always like, well, I could do this and hit more numbers and I could do this and maybe fit in and do whatever. But at the end of the day, like if you can break through that and be just you and just do what works for you, it's going to make, I think on the artist side of things, everything a lot more enjoyable and easier. And like realizing that not everybody is made to make gimmicky TikToks and not everybody, like you have to find what works for you. And I think that takes like a lot of experimentation and just like going, pushing like through to get out to the other side, where a lot of people just kind of like put one foot in and they're like, oh, I'm going to like kind of do like a piss poor attempt at like mimicking what's going on right now and doing whatever.
And you
like,
can tell.
Yep. And we've all done that. We've all done that. I still do that. I literally do. I don't know who I spoke to. They were like, I do one post for the algorithm. I do one post for me, which I love that because it's like, you have to build. I do think there's easy ways to capture numbers and capture eyes. But like me personally, I am like, I'm a very artistic person and it's hard for me to put a camera in front of me and just like sing a song that I wrote that honestly has like such a larger universe around it that I would way more rather do something cool and creative and like different, but that doesn't always go off, but I still want to do it because it's what makes me happy. And I know the fans that do love it are going to love me because of that side of me, not the side that, you know, everybody does on social media nowadays. So it's just finding what works. And that definitely takes trial and error and it can change all the time. And like, I think we're in an age too where like you can reinvent yourself. You can, you know, release an EP and then release a different sounding EP and like have a total different, like creative vision for it. And I think that is what's going to set yourself apart from a lot of people who are just kind of emulating in the same lane. Like it's hard. It is hard to innovate. It is.
Yeah, definitely. You got to play the game a little bit, like you said, like help you get those numbers and capture people's attention. I always like joke and tell people it's like almost like you're being a siren. It's like, here's a little bait and you're like, gotcha. Yep. Here's my real music. Or like, you know, it's like with my sets, it's like, I love playing like fun DJ sets and it's like, you get everybody headbanging and you're like, okay, now here's my song. And I want you to like cry for a second, like really feel this now that I got you here.
Yeah, but, absolutely. Yeah. It's like, that's the best part about the DJ sets is creating like a full journey. And especially when you get to have those moments where you're with those artists that, you know, you can really do whatever you want and you don't know if they're going to be receptive to you doing you and you do it anyways. I think those are even the shows that I walk away from being like, I could have easily made a set that was dubstep and played my old discography and all of that. And instead I've made a set that encompasses my future music and where the project's going. And they could have fucking hated it instead still, but they loved it because it was different. Like that's when those moments happen. You're like, wow, okay, that was sick. Like, I'm glad I sang. I'm glad I didn't just DJ. Like, I'm glad, because it's easier sometimes. And especially like singing in clubs or having a live element in clubs, like, you know, like sometimes you don't get people who are receptive to it, whether it's the sound guy being like, you're not the headliner, I'm not going to do a sound check with you, or you're not whatever, like, oh, you don't have an audio tech, I can't help you, or da 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 da. And it's just, you have to fight for like the artist that you want to be, especially when you're playing in clubs and places like that. And, you know, you have a music venue here and there, but you're predominantly playing, you know, 12 a.m. sets, 11 p.m. sets, and you're not really in a live music space. But it is cool to see artists growing to such a substantial rate in which they are getting put in the music venues. They are getting put in, you know, the venues that are like Janus Live, like I'm thinking about Florida, like Beecham, like ones that I even consider Vanguard, like a real venue. Like you could put a band on that stage or a hip hop artist on that stage. That's not, in my opinion, a nightclub. Like it is a music venue. And I think that's where the future of dance music can really thrive. And you have these acts like Over Mono, and even back to like OGs like Flume and Porter, like they have all these live elements, and like it's not supposed to be nightclub music. It's supposed to be in a space that is, you know, created for all different types of music.
Yeah. Drop the mic. That was amazing.
Yes.
That was so good.
Yes.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. So I'm really glad we got to have this conversation. We haven't caught up in a while. I missed you because I was deathly ill in Denver. I was so pissed. I was like, I'm going to go snowboarding and then I'm going to hang out with Sarah and then we're going to like be whatever. And I woke up and my throat was like swollen shut. And I was like, I could go see her, but they're probably all going to get sick. So I'm not going to do that. I was just like, not now, not now. So tell me about some things that you're excited for in the future. Like I know you have a collab with some pretty large names going on right now, and you have some new songs coming out on like bucket list labels, like tease whatever you can for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have two new songs coming out in March. We love when that happens, when the labels line up together. So people are just going to get two presents in March. But one of them is on a bucket list label, which I'm very excited about. You guys will know about that very soon. I feel like it's no really secret that I have a collab with Company and Adventure Club that's not out yet. Mm-hmm. I've been on a few dates with Adventure Club now. I got to open for them. They're amazing. We've got to debut it and it's popped off. So hopefully that'll be out, you know, at some point this year.
In the next decade. In the next decade, hopefully that comes out.
Yeah, whenever Company finishes.
Yeah.
It's fun. I can say
love it. Love it.
We
so
love him.
Talk to me. We'll go back to the rest of exciting things happening. Talk to me about that process. Like, did you send a demo? Was there like an email chain where they were like, hey, we're looking for vocalists? Like, how did that all come to fruition?
Honestly, my manager really helped me capitalize on a moment, really. So basically, give you the full picture. This was December of 2022. I just released Never Be the Same with Jessica. Jessica was also just releasing a song with Adventure Club.
I remember that.
So same time period. So Adventure Club had a show in Orlando right after they released that, I think, like December 30th, 2022. And I got to open for them. So my manager was like, this is like perfect timing for you to message them and be like, hey, I just released a song with Jessica. You guys just released a song with Jessica. I'm opening for you. Like, would love to talk to you. And one thing led to another, built a relationship with them, and they sent me music. And that is as simple as that. So
they're the best. You know, they're very sweet. Both of those boys.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like, you know, it is like the cold emails or the cold Instagram messages where you or your team are like, hey, here's your vocals. I'd love to work with you or whatever. But that one was just the right place at the right time, the perfect opportunity.
Absolutely. And that's how it just happens sometimes. That's literally, I feel like that's very, very similar to how the Griffin remix happened. Like not me being involved with other people. Like I just reached out for stems. I sent some new music and his team sent over stems and they were like, dope. And then we played Red Rocks and that just happened.
So amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? It's like, you just gotta be, sometimes preparation meets opportunity. It was crazy.
Even
with my first song with Jessica, I got an email out of nowhere. Like people are like, how'd you land that collab? I'm like, the universe is just like, blip. I was driving in LA to go to a job. And like, I looked at my email and I was like, what does this say? Like, does this actually say this? So sometimes it just be like that.
It does. And it just always like, it's a testament to like, even the small moves you make can help like a bigger stepping stone, like down the line. So I feel like everything you put out, like even if it's with like a really small producer, you're releasing it independently and not on a label, like still put your best foot forward, because that's what's going to like open those doors for you at a later time. And then like when you get that opportunity, I mean, I remember, yeah, for like the Griffin remix, they sent the stems and they were like, we need it by Friday. And it was like Wednesday. And I was like, okay. And then like, you clear your schedule, mm-hmm. you call out of work, you work on a remix for like 2 days straight and you do it. And then like good things come out of it. And like, I'm not always saying that's ideal or the best situation, but that's oftentimes how you as an up and coming act get opportunities put on your like doorstep. It's kind of like you either perform and like a lot of those opportunities won't come to fruition. Like I could have done that and they could have been like, yeah, it's just not right for this remix. Like da da da. And I'm like, all right, on to the next one. I did the same thing for Alice in Wonderland and it wasn't the right remix. It just like wasn't what she and her team was looking for. But then the Griffin remix came a week and a half later. And then like, it was what his team was looking for. It's like taking advantage of every opportunity and just understanding that not everyone's going to pan out, but the ones that do pan out, like those are total wins. And like you making, I remember I literally exported stems from the Alice in Wonderland remix, sped up the BPM, and then it was the lead in the Griffin remix. So like, I think of like, if I didn't do that and then be told no, and then be able to take some of that and reincorporate it into this remix, like would it have even happened? And I feel like that's very similar in your situation where like,
yeah,
I love Jessica. Like I consider her a dear friend. I was with her this weekend. Like she, like that wouldn't have happened, whether it was from her or her team, if you hadn't done previous stuff. Like they're not just going to like cold call.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really cool opportunity. Like I said, for the first one, it was random. It was a random email from her manager, but yeah, it was really nice to like have a follow-up song with her, which then, you know, snowballed into, you know, playing bass rush shows, getting locked into bass rush festivals. So the universe is always like looking out for you and presenting opportunities. And like, you know, you with Red Rocks, you know, you have to play with Griffin. So
yeah, no, definitely. Surreal thing. Yeah, for sure. And then you just kind of, you take that and you also realize that like, I never want to say this in regards to music, because I think in electronic dance music, if you do make, there are songs that can really change the trajectory of your career. We've seen it with Craze. We've seen it with other individuals. But I do look at events where like, there's no one show that's going to make your whole career. There's no one, like it's a constant effort of very small wins and like climbs and like ups and downs that are going to give you like the footing to have that longevity and do that headline tour and build in those small cap rooms. Like, it's all an effort that like combines into one. So it's just kind of like always staying open to opportunities and, you know, allowing yourself to like get in the studio every day and like try and make something every day. Cause the more you do it, the more you have the chances of writing something that's going to come to fruition or be a huge hit or, you know, get signed to X label or slotted with X producer. Like it's a constant grind and effort that you have to like show up for yourself every single day.
Yes, exactly. Everything snowballs on top of each other until one day something just goes, and it's usually when you least expect it.
Yep, it really is usually when you least expect it, 100%. Okay, so I know you have a lot more music than that, but huge collab coming out with Company and Adventure Club, hopefully this year. And then I know you're releasing on a very, very fun label next month. What other music and show stuff can you tease for us?
Yes. So I am playing Breakaway in Tampa in April. I have some other festivals and shows that I'm working on, but I can't confirm anything right at the moment.
Exciting.
Yeah. And I'm working on a bunch of originals right now, which I'm very, very excited about.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so exciting. Oh, that's so exciting.
Yes.
And that definitely goes into the lane of like you creating that universe for yourself of where you can go and collab with whoever you want and you can feature or be, you know, co-writer or producer, but also like creating that universe for like, who is Sarah Benio? what is it she exactly all about? And, you know, you can change that every record. You can change that every EP. Like, that's the great thing about music and about where you've already, you know, not put yourself in a box to where you can do a bunch of different stuff and it be received well, like by the fan base that you have thus far. Is SMF happening? SMF is not happening then.
I don't think it's happening. I think that they're taking a year off and Breakaway is going to, I think, essentially kind of replace
that's like a placeholder, right? Like that's
I don't think it's, I don't think it's like disappearing forever. I honestly thought it was happening.
Yeah, because like you said that and I was like, ooh, April. I was like, April. And because I'm doing some podcast stuff with Breakaway, with a few sponsors, but in other places, not in Tampa. And I was just like, oh, that's in April at Raymond James. Like, that's really close. And then I said, okay, so that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. And my head was just like, wait, is that like not happening? That makes sense. It makes sense. Florida's like always changing. I know Okeechobee is happening this year, right? I think it's going to happen.
I think that it's not happening this year and it's going to happen next year.
That makes sense.
I think. Hold me to that, but I'm pretty sure either it's happening this year, but I think Insomniac has pulled out of it, or it's happening next year and Insomniac is still pulled out of it.
Yeah. Okeechobee is supposed to be a grassroots festival. It's supposed to be like an electric forest of the South. Like I went when I was in college in 2018. And I went when I was 2017, I think it was like the first 2 years. And it was like, it was very like Bonnaroo meets Electric Forest, like very chill, like bands. Like it was everything from like Grizz to like Usher to Kendrick Lamar to like it was very dope. And like, I hope that's the energy that it brings back, because there's not a festival like that in Florida besides Halloween. There really just isn't. So it'll be cool. Florida's always popping. Florida's always doing different stuff.
Something.
Yeah, always has like something.
Five different festivals.
I know, but it's always exciting. Is there any last things that you want to let the listeners know about? I think we covered a lot.
I think this covers it all. I really appreciate you having me on.
Of course. Well, I'm really glad we got to do this. I can't wait for everybody to hear the new music. And if you're in Florida, make sure you catch Breakaway. I have to check out the lineup, but I remember it being like a really cool lineup, like multi-genre, versatile, and like fun, like just super fun. Yeah. So that should be lovely event. Thank you so much for coming on today, Sarah. I greatly appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Bye, guys. See ya.